Well, hello there. My name is Tom Moulton, and welcome to Jump In Tucson. I am the co-founder of the Southern Arizona Attractions Alliance, and I have the pleasure of being the executive director for the last 6 years. My story is real simple. I moved here to work at Old Tucson in 1997 after the big fire in 95, and got an opportunity to be very engaged in the tourism community. We felt that there's probably a little more awareness that was needed about the attractions, and we were able to form the nonprofit group, the Southern Arizona Attractions Alliance, just about 25 years ago, along with four other GMs and executive directors. And we've been having a lot of fun ever since, and today is the debut show of Jump in Tucson featuring the attractions. And we have really some special guests today. Looking forward to really hearing from them. When I had the opportunity to work really directly with the Desert Museum, I had an opportunity to really get to know a lot about what they were doing. But I'm not sure the folks listening today know all the things that they're involved in. So today, we have two special guests. Our first guest is Tiana Holder. She's the marketing and communications manager. And then a little later on in the show, we're going to have Kim Franklin. She's on the science side of the Desert Museum. And that's probably the least we know about the Desert Museum. But after this hour, you'll know a lot more. So, Tiana, you're there. We really look forward to talking with you. And enjoying some communications about what is going on at the Desert Museum. But before we ask the first question, you just completed your 70th anniversary, I believe. Is that correct, Tiana?
That is correct. Labor Day of last year made 70 years of the Desert Museum.
And I remember that because it started in 1952. So I'm going to reveal my age here because that's when the Desert Museum opened with some several community leaders that you may or may not know, but historically some wonderful people saw the need to really share the Sonoran Desert, as we call it, the living desert, with the rest of the world. But you're not quite the newbie anymore, but you haven't been there for a long time. So I thought what we kick off the show is just to get to know you just a little bit more. So I'm just going to ask a simple question, who you are and how did you discover the Desert Museum?
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you for having me. I am Tiana Holder. I am a fourth generation Arizonan. And I actually grew up in Globe, a small mining town about 100 miles north of Tucson. And I come from a long line of ranchers. And I've always felt very connected to the land that I grew up on, very connected to the desert. And so when I found out I would be moving to Tucson and started looking for jobs, I was thrilled whenever the marketing manager position opened up. And then everything fell perfectly into place, and here I am. It all worked out.
Well, we're so lucky that you're here in Tucson. And, of course, when I moved here in 1997, one of the requirements was to get myself included in the community as much as I possibly could. And that really wasn't much of a request from my boss, Elaine Levy. And I got deeply involved in the tourism community, and you and I had an opportunity probably about a year ago or so to sit down and talk about the Sonoran Desert and talk about the Attractions Alliance and hear a little bit about your goals. But let's kind of maybe recover some of that conversation. Is that obviously when you got the opportunity to come to the Desert Museum, there were a level of excitement, as you mentioned, was tremendous. And of course, working for the top family zoo in the United States, maybe the world. We can be a little biased here. what is happening over that first year or so, and has it met your expectations?
Oh, absolutely. Here at the Desert Museum, I think that our name can be a little misleading because we are more than a museum. We are of course, a natural history museum, but we're also botanical gardens, an AZA-accredited zoo and aquarium, an art institute and gallery. And that's not all. That's just what, you know, our guests see when they visit us. But every single day, we're also conducting research, educational programs, and conservation efforts to protect the Sonoran Desert. And so some people don't realize that, or sometimes we have guests, especially guests who are visiting from out of state or out of the country, who are expecting, you know, more of an indoor experience, what you would think of as a museum, and they come out here and they're shocked that there's so much more going on, and they're shocked that we're predominantly outdoors. So a little bit later, my colleague Kim will get more into the research and education and conservation aspect of what we do. But what really sets us apart from other similar facilities is that we are so multifaceted, and all of the work that we do, everything from all of the flora and fauna that you'll find on grounds to the research and conservation projects that we do kind of behind the scenes, all of that is exclusively focused on the Sonoran Desert region. So we are regionally focused, and all of our work is benefiting, you know, our community here, as well as parts of Mexico, since the Sonoran Desert, you know, is also in Mexico. And yeah, over the last year, we're continuing to grow, both on grounds, what our guests get to see, but also with our conservation work and our research and our educational programs. And being someone that grew up in Arizona, I thought, you know, I'm obsessed with the desert. I'm a diehard desert fan, and I thought I knew all about it. And what I have learned more than anything is that I know nothing. Every day I learn something new, which I love. That's what I want, you know, out of a job. I want to be involved in my community, and I want to be learning and growing. So every day I'm learning new things, and the Sonoran Desert is so diverse and so fascinating. There's so much to learn. So I hope that our guests feel that when they come here and they learn something new every time.
Well, I remember my first experience at the Desert Museum, and it was the docent program, where you actually have employees and volunteers that are out there answering all the questions, sharing all the information. You know, the Desert Museum has been really innovative in the way that it presents the animals and the plants of the Sonoran Desert. So we have a wonderful other zoo here in town, the Reed Park Zoo. And yes, it's completely different. I mean, you all believe in conservation and certainly, you know, species survival, which I think is through the Zoo Association, which you're both affiliated with. But on the other hand, you are, in a sense, exclusively promoting the animal and plant life of the Sonoran Desert. And I think that's what sets us apart. And so your knowledge of ranching, obviously, I would imagine has helped you immensely, especially when you're doing shows like this, where you can really relate how important it is to, you know, keep the nature aspect, the outdoor adventure side, in the front, forefront of the of your visitors. Just real quickly, we have a minute or so before we go to break, but I understand. I see that you're really driving home that you're more than just a zoo, even though that's important and will always be one of your mainstays. So, can you just share in a minute or so a little bit about why you felt the campaign was necessary, and then how's it going?
Yeah, it's going great, and it's necessary. I think that a lot of locals think of us more as a zoo or botanical garden that are familiar with us, and I think a lot of visitors are expecting a museum, and so we kind of wanted to drive that idea that we're more than, you know, you expect, and we're also predominantly outdoors, because some people aren't expecting that. We have it all over our website, but, you know, sometimes people don't look at that, or you just end up coming out here. There's lots of different ways people show up, so we felt like that was a short and sweet way to let people know, you know, to expect more, that, you know, we're more than just a museum. And you're also going to do a lot of walking, so wear comfortable shoes.
Well, great. We're about ready to go into the break, and we're going to have you back for one more segment. Talk a little bit about what's new and what's coming and some of the festivals that are going on at the Desert Museum. You are listening to Jump in Tucson, and this is Tom Moulton, your host for Thursday morning. Well, welcome back to Jump in Tucson. This is Tom Moulton, your host for Thursday morning. We have a series of shows that are going on Monday through Friday for you to listen about what the community is all about and get to hear some of, of those leaders talk about some of their successful projects and initiatives. So we're here today talking about the attractions and the Arizona Sonoran Desert Museum. And we have a special guest, Tiana Holder, who's the Marketing and Communications Manager of the Desert Museum. Now, Tiana, I remember asking Craig, your executive director, many years ago about, is it okay to just call it the Desert Museum? What do you say to that?
Yeah, I think many locals call us that, and we view it as a term of endearment. You know, it's like, you know us, you have a little nickname. You don't, our name is long, so that's totally fine.
One of the things I wanted to, we have a fairly a longer segment here, and we want to get into what's new and what's happening and be able to spend a significant amount of time on that. But a little bit of, just a little bit about the history in 1952, where a section of the desert was carved out. Obviously, very natural surroundings were survived. You recall anything from reading or videos or anything that about what happened in that initial time period in 1952, and how excited was the community?
Oh, yeah. Well, if only I could have been here for it. But
I was there, but
it was a big deal. It was a big deal. I've read a lot about our history, and I've also talked with some of our archivists, and we do have some people that were here when we opened that were a part of the museum that are still around. So I've talked with some of them. They talked about seeing license plates from every state in the nation. It was a new idea having this living museum, and people were just so excited about it. They wanted to share their excitement with, you know, the beauty of the desert, because they felt like it maybe got overlooked. You know, a lot of people think about the mountains or the ocean as like this beautiful place to go to, and they wanted to share that the desert is equally as wonderful and relaxing and exciting and adventurous. So I think they did that, and I think we're still doing that. But we've grown a lot since then. We've gone through a lot of different phases, and we used to actually have a local television show that if you dig around the internet, you can find some of the episodes of Desert Trails. And it's pretty funny to watch because some of the things we used to do, you know, we would never do today, but it's part of our history. We did it. We would bring certain animals to schools that would not ever leave grounds today. You know, nowadays we'll bring reptiles and smaller things if the animals are feeling up to it. We'll bring them certain places sometimes, but I mean, you know, they used to, there's a video, one of the episodes, they're feeding like a bobcat with a bottle, which is just hysterical and also not AZA approved. That wouldn't happen now, but it's out there. You can find it. We also talked a lot about plants back then too, so that was pretty cool. 'Cause a lot of people don't know about all the different uses for native plants. We're really big on encouraging folks to, you know, plant native species in their yards here and learn how to use them, and also identify invasive species that we don't want here that threaten our biodiversity. So like I said, I lived here my whole life, and I had never tried cholla. I didn't know people ate cholla. And I tried that last year here at work with our ethnobotanist, Jesus Garcia. He pickled some cholla and brought it to work and let me try it, and it was delicious.
I remember when the Tucson City of Gastronomy certification first became public, and there was a consortium of scientists engaged in gastronomy, and I guess you call the art of gastronomy, and the Desert Museum sponsored an event, and you had just secured a new food concessionaire. And I recall the story is the organizer of the event said, well, we need to make sure we have everything that is native here, grown here, and in the ingredients of the food that you're going to serve.
Yeah.
So there, about 30 or 40 of us had a wonderful afternoon in the outdoors at the Desert Museum. Now, I'm not sure what we were eating at that time. So I go along with what you're saying is that being from the Midwest, I wasn't really familiar with our native food. So they did a wonderful job curating what we were eating. And you know what? It was absolutely delicious. So that was a huge challenge for the Desert Museum, but you really pulled it off. And obviously your collaboration with the other attractions and the other and the restaurants in town and so on, and really just generally the community at large is a big asset. And I've been able to experience that directly. So let's just wrap up here this segment. Just tell us real quickly what's new and what can we expect to see in 2024?
Yeah, well, just piggybacking off what you just said, if folks listening are interested in trying some native plants, we do have different harvesting events. So if you go to our website and look at, it's under adult trips and classes, but you can find, we have events for harvesting choya, harvesting prickly pear, harvesting saguaro fruit, and those depend on the time of year. So they're not coming up quite yet, but check that out if you're interested. We do those every year and they're really popular. But this weekend we have Rockin' Minerals, which was formerly known as Mineral Madness. That is our mineral sell and show. So with the Tucson Gem and Mineral Show coming up, we always do our event a little before that starts. And I may or may not have taken a little sneak peek yesterday. They're getting things set up. And let's just say my paycheck hits tomorrow and it might be gone because there was a lot of great things I wanted there. And there's some really beautiful pieces, some cool petrified wood, and just a ton of awesome gemstones. A lot of them are sourced locally in Arizona, but some are from elsewhere. So we have that coming up this weekend. Our sale for members is actually tonight from 4:30 to 7:30. So if you are a Desert Museum member, you get early access to the pre-sale today. Otherwise, it is open to the public on Saturday and Sunday. And we also have wire wrapping for a small fee on Saturday only. So guests can bring their favorite rock or purchase one to be wrapped from a Desert Museum volunteer. And then Sunday during the mineral sell, we have Ask a Geologist from 1 to 2 p.m., and guests can ask all their burning questions, and they can even bring their favorite rock or mineral to be interpreted by our experts. So that's this weekend. Super fun, and the weather should be great. So come out if you're a rock person and join us for Rock and Minerals. And if you haven't already, last year we opened up our fluorescent mineral display. It is in our cave, and it is amazing. The rocks look like any old rocks you see outside, but then with different lights on them, they change all these different colors.
Fantastic. We're going to thank you, Tiana, for joining my first show here on Jump in Tucson. Lots of wonderful information. Don't forget about the gala. Big fundraiser in April. Go to desertmuseum.org and you can learn a lot more about all the things that Tiana has talked about and so much more. We'll be back here in just a moment or so with Kim Franklin and listen to the science side of the Desert Museum. Again, thank you, Tiana, and good luck to you, and we look forward to seeing you live in person at the Desert Museum. Well, welcome back to Jump in Tucson. This is Tom Moulton, your host for today's show. We are talking with the Desert Museum. We just had a wonderful interview with the marketing and communications manager, Tiana. And she made a very strong recommendation when we were putting the show together to talk a little bit about the side that is important to the community and to, the quite frankly, the world, but maybe the public doesn't really know about this behind the scenes. So we have a very special guest today, Kim Franklin, the conservation science manager for the Desert Museum. Well, good morning, Kim.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm so happy that you are here because, again, having been involved with the Desert Museum through my affiliation on with Pima County Attractions and Tourism from about 2001 to 2017, I got an opportunity to kind of walk behind the areas where nobody else could see, or those people that were paying a little bit more money to get behind the scenes. So this is going to be an interesting segment because I didn't really get to know more about the science side, certainly the educational side, which is a huge important part of the Desert Museum, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, very much so.
And I had an opportunity to work with several people in the community on several projects, especially Bufflegrass. So I know we're going to probably touch on that that wonderful knot vegetation that was introduced, thinking that, oh boy, we have a cheap opportunity to feed the cattle in the community. And little did they know the danger of Bufflegrass and how the Desert Museum has been behind the forefront, along in partnership with Pima County, to eradicate Bufflegrass. But Tiana wanted to make sure that while the Desert Museum is the top Tucson attraction, certainly for a family, and one of the, you know, we keep hearing about the top five, one of the top five zoos out there. There's also extensive regional research and conservation efforts that are going on, and the Desert Museum is at the forefront of really protecting the desert. Can you just kind of elaborate a little bit more about how the Desert Museum is taking really much a leadership role in protecting the Sonoran Desert? Because first, maybe we should start with just a brief definition, and I'm going to let you do that just so it's accurate.
Okay.
Where is the Sonoran Desert? How big is the Sonoran Desert? And then let's get into what are you guys doing to protect the Sonoran Desert?
Okay, yeah. Well, the Sonoran Desert is quite big. It's much bigger than probably most of us realize. It extends all the way just up to the Phoenix area, Maricopa County, but then the bulk of the desert actually lies south of the U.S.-Mexico border and includes the entire Baja Peninsula as well as the Sea of Cortez. And so it's quite an extensive desert with lots of unique regions, with unique biodiversity within those regions.
I love that word biodiversity because it's not necessarily a word you use unless you live in Tucson. The Sky Islands, biodiversity, very important terms to understand what they are and how significant the Sonoran Desert is. So what are some of those programs, I mean, those things that you're really making an impact on? And then I think it extends beyond just Tucson, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, very much so. I mean, I guess I do want to just start by saying that the Desert Museum, founded in 1952, has always had an active conservation research program. The research that has gone on since the very beginning, which was a really unique and different aspect of a zoo and a botanical garden. A lot of them did not do conservation research, has been to do research that contributes to the conservation of this beautiful place in which we live. And that continues to this day. And currently we have three focus areas. One is foods, on resilient agriculture, specifically desert adapted crops and also the wild relatives of our crop species, so conserving those. Another is bees, native bees. So when I'm saying bees, I'm not referring to honeybees, which are not native to North America. But few people who live here in the Sonoran Desert actually know that we are in the center of bee diversity in the world. We have more different species of bees here than just about anywhere else in the world. And then the third branch is invasive species. And you mentioned buffel grass already. That has long been a focus of our conservation work. So those are the three areas that we're working in.
Let's expand a little bit on the efforts of buffel grass, how long that's been going on. I attended a workshop many, many years ago, and it had not only environmentalists, but it certainly had about every side of the science side of buffel grass and mm-hmm. what the dangers of buffel grass are. I don't know if people understand how dangerous letting your backyard or your roadside or a vacant lot or part of your attraction, if you're one of the managers listening, how dangerous is buffel grass?
It is really a dangerous fuel. It provides an enormous amount of fuel that can fuel very severe fires. And so buffel grass in our urban environments, around our infrastructure and schoolyards, vacant lots, around our homes, definitely presents a threat. And that's part of the message we try and get out there, is to clear the buffel grass away from your homes, from the places where we work and live. But if we talk about danger in the broader sense, what does buffel grass mean for the Sonoran Desert? Well, there's not just buffel grass, but there's fountain grass, another grass very similar to buffel grass, and then there's many different invasive annual grasses. These are the grasses that you see growing in the winter and springtime. And these grasses present a danger it's actually an existential threat to the desert. These grasses have the capability of transforming what we live in now is today a desert with cactus and trees and shrubs into a grassland, and not one of those beautiful native grasslands you would see in Sonoida, but a buffel grass, fountain grass, invasive grassland that doesn't support the immense rich biodiversity that we've come to love here in the desert. So, yeah, it's truly an existential threat, which is why it has been a top concern, top priority for the Desert Museum for really 2 decades now. We've been working on this issue. 2 decades ago, we were just coming to understand this threat and what the future could look like if we do nothing. And now we are, you know, deep in the weeds, so to say, working on many different aspects of the problem, from the science, the biology of the grass itself, to policy solutions to invasive species more broadly, because they are not just a problem here in the Sonoran Desert, but throughout the world. And the problems just continue to grow.
Now, if I recall at this meeting that I mentioned, the University of Arizona and Pima County have been very much involved in working and collaborating with you on the eradication of these non-native grasses. Is that partnership continuing?
Yes, very much so. I work with partners at the University of Arizona, specifically in the School of Government and Public Policy and the School of Natural Resources, looking at potential policy solutions. And Pima County continues to be a leader in the buffel grass effort. There are Sonoran Desert Weed Whackers do a tremendous amount of work, and they're the reason that Tucson Mountain Park, when you drive over Gates Pass to the Desert Museum, you still see those beautiful, I call them saguaro forests, because these are probably the densest stands of saguaros in the world. And they keep them free of buffel grass, these beautiful slopes. And so definitely leaders. And Saguaro National Park is someone we shouldn't forget as well, who has definitely been leading this effort trying to protect the park. It's the number one conservation issue, buffel grass.
Well, I think it's important, and I think pretty much everybody that lives here knows that the Desert Museum is nestled there between Tucson Mountain Park and the Saguaro National Park, the largest, really, collection of saguaros in the world. I mean, there are certainly some that you see in our friend to the north, but the forests that you can see at Saguaro National Park, if you have not seen that, I personally like to go around 4:30, 5 o'clock, right before the sun sets, and you have an opportunity to see the full depth of the saguaro and the variety of saguaro. I actually have one growing in my backyard from a seed under that wonderful tree that provides shade, a Palo Verde tree. And it takes many, many years, decades, for that first arm to appear. So it is it's a collection of plants we don't never want to lose. And obviously anybody involved in tourism was engaged and has been engaged over the decades ever since you indicated that it was identified as a really a serious threat to the animal and plant life and, you know, to our economy for sure. Now, we're going to ask you to kind of hang in for another segment. This is Tom Moulton, and we're at a brand new show called Jump in Tucson, and I get to be your host every Thursday, where we're going to bring you stories about the attractions, both ones you might know and ones you probably don't know. And today we're talking with Kim Franklin, who was the conservation science manager, and we'll be back in just about 2 minutes and to hear more about what Kim is up to. Well, welcome back to Jump in Tucson, a brand new show that takes place every weekday, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. on KVOI, 10:30 a.m. Before we get back with our guests from the Desert Museum, I wanted to tell you a little bit about the show tomorrow. Dr. Ed Ackerley will be here. And as you probably know, he's a U of A professor as well as runs a very successful advertising agency here in town. His guests will be coaches for charity, Janet Hare and Cassidy Hare and Brian Wilson, and to Tucson, Arizona Boys Chorus. I think that's going to be a wonderful show. Again, Dr. Ed Ackerley will be here tomorrow, same place that I'm sitting at right now at 9 a.m. So let's get back to our conversation with Kim Franklin from the Desert Museum. She is the conservation science manager. You know, she was very important to point out that ever since the inception of the Desert Museum in 1952, they have been involved in just about every aspect when it regards science at the out there, especially when it comes to a living desert. So I think what we're going to do, Kim, is spend most of this segment on what are the things that me as a consumer can do to get the word out and to help you and all the partners that are involved in the science aspect. And I think maybe touch a little bit about the outreach to the community as well, because that is so important. Tiana talked a little bit about the Noah's when you were out there and with the station wagon, the old white station wagon that you see when you come to the Desert Museum, and all the outreach programs and that you did and you are still doing, and how that how your engagement is continues with not only the science folks out there, but also the community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm so glad you asked that, because actually we have, within the science department, we have our biggest outreach event of the year coming up. It's going to be Save Our Saguaros Month next month, February, something we do every year to increase public awareness of the threat of buffel grass and fountain grass and other invasive species. There's one called stinknet. And so for the entire month of February, you can go to bufflegrass.org and you'll see a list of volunteer events across the Tucson Basin. And so we encourage everyone to, especially if you've never come out to help remove an invasive species, remove bufflegrass before, we encourage everyone to come out. There's a job for everyone. It can sound kind of daunting, but, you know, some people are simply just stacking the plants into piles, and it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be digging as hard as you can for however long the event is. And so our kickoff event for this year's SOS month is going to be Saturday, February 3rd, and it's going to be at A Mountain. There'll be lots of people there. Our partners will be there. There's limited parking, so we encourage people, if they can, to carpool or even to bike. There's going to be special stickers for people who bike. And we're really excited this year that we have a special component to Save Our Saguaros Month. There's going to be a mural painting event in the park. So we've worked with an artist, Wesley Fawcett Crate, who's created two beautiful paintings that are going to be murals on two walls within Sentinel Peak Park. And the painting is going to take place for a week from February 23rd to March 4th. So just follow us on social media to find out about opportunities to come participate in that. And then we'll have a mural reveal party at the very end on March 9th. And everyone volunteer. We're going to celebrate volunteers and all the hard work they do. Volunteers really do so much to keep our desert free from invasive species, and we're so indebted to them, to the people who have committed to going out even just once a year to help us remove these invasive species.
That's wonderful to hear, and yes, all of our nonprofit organization here, and most of the attractions that are not only part of the membership of the Southern Arizona Attractions Alliance, but those that are here in the community are run by nonprofit organizations who have very special missions. And the collaboration aspect of Tucson, I've lived in seven or eight different tourism markets and have enjoyed a wonderful career. But I have to say, with the Hispanic culture and the number of nonprofits that work together is just absolutely amazing. Tell us a little bit as we get towards the end of our wonderful interviews about the Desert Museum. Tell us, can you expand a little bit more on those collaborations? Because I think it's important to give everyone that's working with you a little bit of a plug.
Oh, yeah, for sure. We couldn't do this alone. Most of the environmental problems that we're facing, they're big. They cross jurisdictional boundaries. It's not that Saguaro National Park can't solve the bufflegrass problem on its own if its neighbor Coronado National Forest and Pima County, Tucson Mountain Park. I mean, it's definitely requires a community-wide effort. And so Saguaro National Park, Coronado National Forest, Catalina State Park, Pima County and their Sonoran Desert Weed Whackers. Tucson Clean and Beautiful has been a great partner. The Tohono O'odham Nation has been a great partner. And so many different volunteer groups around town. They're just been fantastic supporters of this bufflegrass effort. So we have, we bring everybody, and Tucson Audubon Society. I did want to mention them as part of the Save Our Saguaros Month. They have a saguaro planting effort. So if you remember, some of the fires that we've had in the past have led to the loss of some of our saguaros, and they are replanting saguaros in those areas that were burned, as well as maintaining those areas free of invasive species while those saguaros become established.
That is so important to understand the collaborations. And I want to thank Tiana and Kim for joining me today. This is important, I think, to all of us to understand what's going on. We look forward to visiting with you next Thursday. And don't forget to tune in tomorrow at 9 o'clock with Dr. Ackerley, were his guests, our coaches for charity and Tucson, Arizona boys course. Thank you all, and see you next week.